This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at Burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, y'all? So last time I told you I didn't know who I had coming up next on the pod, but I knew I had some dope people lined up to talk with. And, you know, keeping it real, you never know who's going to pop in. Everyone's got busy lives. You know, I talked to a lot of folks and we made it happen, especially if you're one of Hollywood's most badass movie producers. And that brings me on to my next guest for the pod this week. It's insanely dope to get this guy. He's the one, the only, Dana Brunetti. I don't know if you know his name, but you sure as hell know the movies that he's produced and the TV shows he's brought to life. He's the Oscar and Emmy-nominated producer behind the critically acclaimed movies like The Social Network and Captain Phillips, as well as straight-up blockbusters like the 50 Shades joints. Oh, and he has a little show you might have heard of called House of Cards. Yep. He also is a studio head at one point and a business partner, Kevin Spacey, and a vet, too. He spent some time in the Coast Guard way back. But, of course, the thing that really launched his career was a silent movie that he made in film school. It was his first film, starring me. I was rolling a doobie. And it was about continuity, I think. We talk about it. So naturally, he was destined for big things, you know. Yes, Dana and I go way, way back, almost 20 years, I think. And on this episode, we get to talking about the troubles we had being straight-talking New York dudes on social media. Also, how being a vet changes your perspective on stuff. And this is very true. For all you vets out there, you can understand what I'm speaking on. Especially when your career is in the fickle town of Hollywood and the movies and music business, it gets a little tough. These people do not know what they have to go through. Anyway, Dana requests an update on Korean Bodega, of course, because it's a great song. But right after, I ask him if everyone is always pitching him ideas for great movies, which is, you know, hilarious. Anyway, tune in and get the scoop from my man, Dana Brunetti, the badass Hollywood producer. Yeah. I appreciate you doing this, D. It's been a long time. We actually haven't hung in a minute.
Dude, a minute. It's been an hour.
Yeah, actually, you're right, man. I was just looking. My phone just went. It's like they're having the elections over here tonight. But I just saw like picture of my kids. I don't think you even met my boy, right?
Nah.
Because I have a little. I got a little girl now too. Indiana is like a year and three quarters now, man. It's crazy.
That's insane. I got a four-year-old daughter.
Yeah? Yeah, I saw she got the ill treehouse, dude.
Dude, that treehouse is so dope. You won't believe. Every time I get the bill for that, for something new that's going in there, I'm like, oh my God. I can't believe I'm spending so much money on that place, but she loves it. So.
Yeah, yo, it's your baby girl, man. It's totally different. Having a son is cool and all that, but having a girl, it's like, you know, you can only spoil your girl so much. You got a little girl, it's over, man. It's over.
Oh, dude, everyone told me that. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, they're like, right, man. Because Fast is a little girl. Frank's got a little girl. So they all told me it was coming, man.
Yeah, no, I had no idea. And I also, too, I was like, I always thought, like, I want a boy. And then when we're having a girl, I'm like, all right, whatever. And then, but fuck, man, I was like, she got me so wrapped around her family. Mm-hmm. Like,
see, my girl doesn't even talk quite yet. She says words and stuff, man, but once she figures it out, I'll go do it. You know what I'm saying?
You just wait. She's four, and she's fucking manipulative. You think girls have worked you in the past? You ain't seen nothing, man.
That's awesome.
Dude, it's like, what? Okay, yeah.
Well, that's very cool. I'm glad you're in a good spot then, man. So how long have you been in there? You got enough whiskey to keep you for a minute.
Dude, I got so much fucking whiskey. This is all from, and then, you know, Jameson. I do this project with Jameson, too, so I have a whole
You have a Jameson wing?
I have a cask at the distillery in Middleton, Ireland.
Wow.
I should send something.
Can you put me on the list? Put me on the list, man.
Well, yeah, no, because it's like $3,500 a bottle, but I get it all for free because they gave me the whole cask, and I was the first person to get. I was like their beta user of the. It's called the Cask Club, and they had me come over and do the whole thing, and then they started selling these things, and Chinese are buying for like $700,000 a barrel, and so I had one of these barrels that they're selling for, you know, that much. So I figured out how many bottles I have left. About $3,500 a barrel. The problem is, though, I can only bring two at a time here to the U.S., you know, in my Czech luggage.
Yeah, that's right, right?
And so the only time I can get it is when people are coming over. But to London, I can have a ship to you. So I'll have them send you a couple bottles.
Oh, dude, right on, man. Things are slowing down around the Morgan homestead, though, man. I don't really go out much anymore. And when I do, it's like I notice that I'm a little bit shy. I mean, we used to go deep. I was talking to Uncle Mike earlier, man, and we were talking about Bungalow 8, and it was like, wow. We just realized there's so much stuff we can't talk about, but that's good because there's like some decorum still in what we have. You know what I mean? It's like the things you just don't talk about, and like I just see.
Well,
like,
it was even before Bungalow 8. It was Lot 61.
Yeah.
Before Lot 61 was Met Bar.
Yeah, exactly, man. It goes back again.
You want to hear how fucking crazy something is? Because literally I'm moving and I have this fucking thing and I still never know what the hell to do with it. And I came in here and I was like, holy shit, I'm about to talk to Huey. Remember this motherfucker?
Oh, yeah, you got the mortar, man. That was crazy, man. You the bomb, Dana.
Is this fucking thing live?
No, it's not live. It's a practice round.
Are you sure? Because I'm like, fuck, man. This is
no, it's totally not. It's not, man. It's totally like used up. It's a practice one to show people how they put the fuses in them and stuff like that.
All right. Fuck it. I get pulled over, the bomb squad or something ends up in my house, and you see it, like, they fucking think, that's why I shave my beard. I don't think I'm Paris fucking traveling over here from most people as the Toluca Lake was staying.
Well, dude, you know what? I was talking to Becky earlier, and I was like, oh, you know, me and Dana, we both were talking when we first met about enlisting in the military, right? And I think that's kind of like, you know, you see a lot of guys now, because there's been 15 years of like this constant war thing happening, but you see a lot more veterans, right? And I know that this is, it's kind of a double-edged sword where you see more veterans because there's been more shit, but I think the more veterans you see, it's kind of cool, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's also, especially in your line of work, right, man? I mean, how many more guys do you know that served that are your age group, right?
Well, you don't see many in my age group that served. In my business, when I do run into somebody, it's definitely, there's like that brotherhood.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, you did your time, I did my time. It's like, it's almost like you went to prison.
Yeah, in a way it is, man. It is kind of a prison in a lot of ways. I know it shook me up when I first got in there, man. But
you have a little secret, you know, just that. Yeah. You go rope, but yeah, it sets you apart from everybody else. You know what I just discovered? I've spent so much freaking money at Home Depot and everything, but in California, they started putting veteran on the driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And you get veterans discounts. I feel like a retiree. I go in, I'm like, I need my veterans discount. 10% off.
Boom. Boom. I got one for doing the radio. I had like an ID card that I could show. And then like I was like, you know, I don't really want to show that ID card anymore, man. Blowing up their spot. I think it was only 3% though. If it was 10%, I'd be putting that shit on my license, man.
Particularly moving in a new house, I'm in Home Depot every day. And I go in there. And I didn't even realize what happened was I had not this hat. But I had because I have a Trigger Street hat that's made similar to this. It's the Trigger Street Productions, and it looks like this. And the girl looked up and she goes, "You have your military ID." And I was like, "No." And she's like, looked in my hat and she realized it said Trigger Street Production. I'm like, "Oh, but I do have." And I pulled out my license, showed veteran. She's like, "All right, I'll give you the 10%."
Boom!
I was like, "I could have been getting this the whole time."
That's awesome, though, man. That's a good thing. I mean, there's
kind of good.
It is kind of this, you know, over in the UK, they got some cool love for their veterans and stuff like that. But you know, it is kind of like a situation where only a few people find themselves in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, dude, there's a one question. Like, do all your friends who aren't in your line of work tell you they got great ideas for movies?
Are you kidding?
I mean,
I let me just tell you how many I got today.
Do any of them come up pretty good? Did anyone say, hey, you know, that 50 Shades is a good idea for a movie? Or,
well, 50 Shades is a whole different thing, but we can talk about that separate. Are we recording now? Are we going?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I don't know. I like your style. You just fucking wing it and go.
Well, the thing is, what I do is I'll send you a copy of it before I ever think about putting it out. So, I mean, you...
I don't care. Yeah. Dude, you do what you want.
All right.
You know, dude, I say shit all the time. I get myself in trouble constantly. So
I love that about you, man. That's one of the reasons we still hang, bro, is you outlawed, man. You pirating it out there, man.
Most ideas, even people that are in the business, 99% of the ideas are absolute shit. So it's tough. So that's I think the hardest part of my job is wading through the shit to get to the gym. You know, mining through just to find that one thing, and then it's a whole other thing. Once you find that thing that story is good, or you think will make a good movie, then getting made that's a whole nother fucking pushing rocks up hills. Somehow a lot of shit gets made too. That's just that shit. But I always say when I get a movie made that I slip one through the net when no one was looking, because it's like everything is piled against you to water it down and overdevelop it and make it as much shit as it can be, from a great story to a not as great story. They try to water it all the way down just enough to not get it made. And then some of it still gets through. If I'm able to get one that get it through and get it made, that's one thing, but to get it through and get it made and get it made well and the way that I originally saw it, it's phenomenal when you can pull that off. But it's a business full of a lot of crap ideas, and that's part of why I hate telling people what I even do. Like, I have tons of workers running around here right now. I'm sure some of them know what I do, but I don't want to know, because they'll fucking start pitching me ideas. I'm not joking. They will.
Well, I know a lot of people want to tell me to keep write another Scooby Snacks. I get a lot, so I know how you feel, man.
But just do a sequel.
Oh yeah, we're in the studio now doing another Mimosa.
For real?
Yeah, for real. Yeah, so I'm going in tomorrow with the boys. I'm in there tomorrow morning.
You gotta do another. I'm doing it too. You gotta do another. You gotta update Korean Bodega.
Yeah.
You gotta set London.
Yeah, you know what? I've been trying to get a bodega around, you know, but they didn't really have no bodegas over in London, man.
Well, now is it a falafel shop or what?
Well, you know what? It's literally like
it's
like an off license, they call them. It's just like kind of a deli, but doesn't stay open late.
Yeah, not like a Korean bodega.
No, Korean bodegas, they don't close, man. When they start getting tired, they cook bacon. You know, they put the bacon on. Boom.
There's only 24 hours in our days. There's 26 hours in the Korean bodega. Go, man.
Yeah, man. It's like dog years as well, dude. Dog years as well. Yo, so one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was being, like you said, unapologetic. You're just you, dude. And being in like a situation in, I guess, Hollywood, for lack of a better term, right, that is very over-calculated, overthought, to a point where it's like, it's kind of boring. And then, you know, I see you and you haven't changed a goddamn bit. And I think that's great. No, in a good way. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, you know.
And don't let this go to your head, but do you know that my first film that I ever did, who the star of it was and where it started and what it was?
Yeah, I remember, yeah. That was a good one, though, man. I believe it was some of my best work.
Well, yeah, I think you should tell everybody what it was that we were doing.
Well, you were doing.
Do remember?
You were doing a film. You were at film school, and you needed to help out for some subject matter. And I happened to be in your backyard at the time. I was like, why don't you just film me rolling a doobie? So yeah, it was me rolling a doobie.
It was my first film subject. It was my first film I did at NYU, and I had to show continuity. And so
yeah, you did a lot of different takes of me, like, keep the two piles, you know.
No, it was literally the first film of continuity was how to roll a joint.
You know what? I think that was a great place for you to start. It went up from there, man. You know.
So me being unapologetic, I did. You know, I guess I started there because I think I was the only one at NYU Film School that did their first film about how, you know, it was basically about drugs and how to roll a joint. And marijuana wasn't as acceptable then as it is now. Not to say anything about our age.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's legal most every place now, though, man. Especially out where you are, man.
Dude, I remember when you got it was shortly before that, you got arrested riding around on your bike.
Yeah.
What do you mean you got put in jail?
Oh, a BMX bike. I was on a BMX bike, man. Me and my boy Mateo. Oh, God. Yeah, man. It's times have changed. Now I'd be celebrated as a revolutionary.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but to your point, this town is full of everyone just walking on eggshells. It's a very scared town. Everyone's afraid to say no because they think it might turn into the big thing or that they'll piss somebody off. But they're also, they don't want to say yes because if they do and it bombs or whatever, no one wants to take any responsibility for anything. And everyone's so overly PC to the point where it's just, you know, look, I'm moderate. I'm not a liberal. I'm not conservative. I swing both ways on different views, different opinions.
You mean like a human being normally has? Yeah.
Yeah, not like a fucking sheep.
Yeah.
And that's what this. And so a lot of people are always afraid of stepping on toes because, ooh, I might want to work with them one day, or ooh, they might, you know, give me a job one day, or, you know, fuck that. If you're gonna run around that, you don't have any opinion. You don't stand for anything. Then you're not going to be good at what you're going to do. You're just going to be another fucking cog in the wheel, and you're going to be, you know, following somebody else's lead and not doing anything. And I think that's really one of the big reasons I've been able to do. I've made a lot of waves. I pissed a lot of people off. I did a lot of things that people said I probably shouldn't have done. But if I look back, if I didn't do those, then, you know, I probably wouldn't be where I would. I know I wouldn't be where I am. To that point, though, I also see a lot of people that come in and like, oh, people that make it like Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, and then you know, they're badasses. They don't follow the rules, and you know, so I'm not either. And so they come in and be disruptive, just to be not disruptive in a good way, but just disruptive. And they want to do their own fucking things. They think they know best. That's not what you want to do either. There's still rules and there's still lines you got to follow, but you know, you don't have to be worried about fucking hurting people's feelings.
Yeah, I was, you know, from an outside point of view, when I was growing up, I always thought like actors were probably the most resilient people in the world because all they do is just get knocked down their whole entire lives. You know what I mean? It's like I knew working actors in New York, like stage people, and you're like, damn, that's fucking tough to do that. And then this new generation, they're all like, oh, that hurts my feelings.
I heard the first few castings that I sat through, I was like, I fucking could never be an actor. Because literally all they do is go around town from one meeting to the next into these castings and just get rejected. Rejected. Like, if they have five auditions to a date, most likely they're going to get rejected five times. Because there's only one person that's going to get that job. And there's a line out the door for each one of those. So they just keep going around every day, getting rejected, 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 rejected. So you got to be a tough motherfucker to be in this business. That's for an actor. You have to be a tough motherfucker to be in this business at any level. The actors are a special breed because it's all day, every day. Writers, you get rejected, you get notes, you get bullshit, your script gets, you know, it's like same thing crews. I pitch shit all the time. It gets rejected or it doesn't go anywhere or it gets set up and you get it going forward and just as you think it's about to happen and financing falls apart or just the studio, you know, executives change and your project that you worked 2 years on is just gone and, you know, nothing's happening with it. Director, everybody in this business, it's a tough business because you never know. We're like gypsies. You never know where you're going to end up. You never know what's going to happen. It's not like working, you know, a mill job or working, you know, a regular office job where you go there every day and you know basically what's going to happen. It's very unpredictable. That said, it's a fucking awesome business too if you can make it. But you know, I've done all aspects. And you know, I started as a fucking assistant in this business.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you did that. You did the Ground Zero, a year at Ground Zero movie. That was pretty. That was like one of your first films, right? Yeah.
It was a documentary that came out. My first documentary was about this guy living upstate New York who loved.
Oh, dude, Frank. Yeah.
Frank, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I remember that shit, dude, yeah. Fuck yeah, man, good movie too, man. I thought that one was after, but was it right afterwards or right before?
That was right before, and then I did a year of Ground Zero, but I just kind of came on the end of that just to help get that completed. And then I picked up the rights to Bringing Down a House, which became 21. Yeah. And then that turned into, you know, that took 6 or 7 years to get made. In the meantime, I did the first one I did was the one I just got into the Twitter battle with Alec Baldwin about his first time.
You kind of that dude's he's Irish. That's what it is, man. Them Irish dudes be sitting around getting real upset and offended at shit that's on social media. They have like a drink or two.
Just gonna be some random girls walking behind me here.
I figured as much, man.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, that social media has caused me a lot of trouble.
You know, me too, man. Me too. And you know what? It's because we're a little bit old school about stuff. I mean, just the way I know we grew up in like a similar kind of circumstance. It's like, you know, if someone says some shit about you, you'd look them in the eye and be like, "What'd you say?" And then it goes from there. It's like the Twitter thing. It's a new generation being able to curse each other out and not getting upset about it.
Yeah. No. My last battle was the one with Alec, and you know, somebody sent me. They sent me the blurb that from his book, you know, saying that he didn't find out that Nikki was 17 until after, and she was actually 16, not 17. And didn't find out until after shooting had ended, and that he then blew up on the producers or erupted on the producers, whatever he said. If you would have just said, "I didn't find out that she was 17 until shooting ended," and left it at that, I'd be like, "Okay, fine, whatever. He's a fucking liar, and I know the truth, whatever." Yeah. But then when he drug me into it as to basically make it look like we did something shady or you misled him in some way, I'm like, fuck that. I'm gonna call him out on it. And everybody, CAA and everyone are like, "Are you fucking crazy? What are you doing?" I'm like, "I don't give a fuck. It's the truth. And I'm going to put it out there." So then when he came at me, then everyone was like, "What the hell are you doing? Hey, he's fucking crazy." I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm fucking crazy too."
Yeah.
So bring it. I don't think he thought he was going to get the response that he got from me and that was going to turn into what it was going to turn into. And I actually gave him warning. We actually share the same agent. And I called our agent and said, "Hey, you better fucking call him and let him know that I know he knows me a little bit, but he doesn't understand that I'm just as crazy as he is. So you better call and let him know that if he fucking keeps coming at me, I'm going to come back just as hard." And the agent was like, "I'm staying out of this. I'm like, just between you guys." I'm like, "No, you're in this because you represent both of us." So my next tweet, I fucking included him into the next tweet. Fucking pull his ass right in.
Yo, get the Asian involved, man. That's what you get for your 10 off the top, son. Absolutely, man. I got to get this guy's name. I like the way he operates, man.
Well, Matt Del Piano.
Del Piano. We'll be talking, dude. We'll be talking.
Stay right where you are. Don't move. Don't move a muscle. Don't move. The sniper's got you. We'll be back after this.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I remember there was this time, I think, when I guess right when you started doing Trigger Street, and I guess it was right before the social media thing happened, the movie, that is, right? And you were like, I remember we were talking, you're like, "Yo, I really fucking like this. I'm going to go kick this shit in the ass." I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but you were like, "Yo, I'm going to go for it, man." And then you just, like, the next thing I know, you were up for, like, Oscars and shit. I was like, when I do what I do with the music, I kind of, my success was because I knew that I could envision it and all that kind of thing. Yeah. I'm just trying to probably ask, did you have that did you have that idea that you were going to get rich or die trying kind of thing? You're like, I'm going to do this or it's going to fucking kill me or whatever.
Yes and no. I mean, I never really, I don't want to sound cliche. I didn't do it for the money or accolades or anything.
Well, I meant that more of like an attitude kind of thing. Like, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going
to
be great.
Oh yeah. No, if you don't tackle a project that way, then you have to go at it that way. Cause it's hard enough to get a film made, period, or hard enough to do anything in this period. So if you don't, go at it with a vengeance like that, it doesn't matter if it's something that turns into like Social Network or a small independent movie that no one ever sees. You have to go at it with a vengeance. And with that, going after the Social Network, that was one that I just knew that it was a great story. No matter how it had to do with Facebook or not, it's just the core of the story was good and something that fit right in my wheelhouse. But yeah, when you go after something, like you can never, it's like when you write a song, you don't know how well it's going to be embraced or how well it's even going to turn out.
Yeah.
You might done and be like, it's all right, but it's not my best song. And you don't really know until the end, but when it works out, that's, the best thing that there is. Like, fucking A, all that work and everything, it paid off. And not just financially, but it paid off because it's embraced.
Yeah. Do you think that's because you trust yourself?
If you don't trust yourself, you're going to be like, come on, you walk out on a stage in front of thousands of people. If you don't trust yourself, you're not going to be able to fucking do that. I'm going after, Captain Phillips. I had to get the rights for that. The guy just had three Somali pirates fucking sniped in the head right next to him. He's on a ship. I'm on a phone calling his family. Right after he's fucking rescued. Now I know he's alive. I mean, you gotta have some confidence and trust and then get on a plane and fly to Vermont and sit down and have dinner with the guy while he still has bruises around his wrist from being bound and saying, I want to make a movie about you. Most people wouldn't do that. Because they're just, I wasn't being crass, but you have to be a hawk. So I did it in a very gentle and subtle way. And that's a certain art in itself, the getting to agree to, you basically have to sell yourself to them and win them over and explain to them what you're going to do. Actually, a funny story about the military.
Well, you see, I wanted to tie that together because I think a lot of times, I talked to a lot of dudes that were in military and we have a way of just cutting through the bullshit. Just being like,
it's also a New York thing. Yeah. That's a New York thing, too. I always say in L.A., it's L.A.'s very fake. It's because what I was saying earlier, no one wants to say no and everyone's your friend because they know everyone's like, what can you do for me or what will you maybe be able to do for me in the future?
Yeah.
So no one wants to, the very wordy and all over the place and everyone is buddy-buddy. In New York, it's like in the military, but particularly in New York, you can't have that many millions of people on a 10-mile island and not have them cut through the shit. Everyone says New Yorkers are rude and they're crass. No, they're not. You got to get to the fucking point. Mm-hmm. Because, and it's just a respected thing. The military is the same way. We don't have time to sit there and sugarcoat everything. It's like, there's a fucking order, do it. It's mm-hmm. direct. It's like you're a fucking robot. You know how it is. You go to boot camp, you're programmed.
Yeah.
You get a command and you react. And that's actually what part of it this is boot camp is about, and part of training military is you become desensitized and then reactionary.
Yeah.
So you're told and you do it. And that's what has to happen. Like, I rub a lot of people the wrong way because actually just hearing moving into my house, now I'm bumping heads with my girlfriend because I'm just like, boom, you gotta do this, you gotta do that, and then, she comes back, oh, is that what you want me to do, please? Okay, please, but do I have to fucking say that every time? We're all the same mission here.
Yeah, no, I hear you there, man, I hear you. I guess it's just the kind of way you look at stuff. I mean, that's why we were friends back in the day, because we looked at shit the same way. We'd sit around and go, this shit is hilarious for all the right reasons, man. Now, what do you got going on with, because my wife is a big fan, like myself, of House of Cards, man, which is completely bananas. And I think I read that you said something about, like, when this last election cycle was ramping up, you're like, yeah, we're going to step off for a minute because it can't be as fucking bananas as what's going on in real life. And I kind of respected you for that because I was like, you know what? It's true. You want to see how this fucking thing plays out a little bit. But I just started watching the new series. Don't spoil it for me, man. But it's fucking great again, man. Now that show in particular, because I know that Kevin really fucking loves Frank, man. That's like his alter ego, right? But is it one of, I mean, you could tell that everybody who's doing it, they have like that that whole like, almost like it's a wine to them. Like they just love tasting that character and that universe and stuff.
Yeah.
And how fun is it? Do you guys actually spend a lot of time in D.C. or is it mostly done out west?
No, we shoot it all in Baltimore, right outside of Baltimore.
All right.
And so, yeah, we're all based there for a couple of days. The tax incentive that we get to shoot in Maryland that we get from the state because, you know, we create a lot of jobs and build an industry there. And then the close proximity to D.C. gives us the ability to shoot exteriors when we need to.
Okay, yeah.
Not that we actually shoot much there now, because as Bowie creator used to say, they don't like it when a bunch of big trucks are parked outside of government buildings. So it's not easy. You know, when we show up with our crew or camera trucks and everything, it's not easy to go there. It's a lot of people thought that it was going to be very difficult for us just to, and I don't mean this in a pun, but to trump reality. Mm-hmm. We actually, all five seasons, or the first four seasons, what we had shot actually ended up becoming what reality was.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it was in step with when we released with like what was going on. And so people thought that, oh, we were just like pulling from the headlines and doing that. And that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
We had all this stuff written and it had all been shot well before, you know, obviously it was recently released and happened. I used to joke with Bo Willimon, the original creator of the show, that, fuck, whatever we want to have happen in the world, you should just write it. And that's what happens. So then, you know, I don't know how many episodes you've watched, but if you watch now, it's sort of very close to what is happening now. So we didn't take it from that.
Yeah, it kind of, life imitated art, right?
It just keeps happening, and it's so fucking strange. And I'm telling you, I think we just need to, just write what we want to have happen. And it'll happen. that show, it's taken on a life of its own, and it's pretty incredible. I mean, look, Putin has his guys watching it, saying, you know, what, because they think.
Well, I mean, you guys were super clever the way the characterizations, because I knew that back in the day, I don't want to get too into it, but I knew that you knew a dude who was the chief of staff. And I knew that you guys kind of, when it first came out, I was like, wow, this must be pretty fucking authentic because these dudes knew some dudes. And then when it came out, I was like, wow, this is fucking great. And being over here in the UK, I saw the original one, which is cool. You know, it's a little bit probably 70s, you know what I'm saying, or that 80s vibe. But the way you guys do it, you actually did like a, like, I'm saying this in a complimentary way, but like a Wes Anderson thing where he creates his own universe. Yeah. Like all his movies take place.
Yeah, which I had to.
Yeah. So this universe of Frank Underwood's is amazing. It's like you can have stuff that kind of goes in between, you know, reality and fantasy and stuff, but it works in that universe, man. But it is strange how, it is strange how you're right that it kind of has swayed towards what you guys were, your universe.
Yeah, well, that was one of the big concerns, and the British version was so beloved that everyone was like, oh, there's no way that you can, you know, ever top that version. And, you know, and we knew that we were going to be up against the comparison, and, you know, that, and it was such a good show. That's why we remade it here and set it in DC, and from the UK. But how it turned out, we could have never imagined. If it could have only been on the same level as the UK one, I would have been ecstatic. But the level we got it to is incredible. And then also, we were under the gun, and this goes back to what we were saying earlier, you know, trusting yourself. And, you know, how long have I been doing stuff, you know, online and talking about Trigger Street, TriggerStreet.com, and stuff I was doing then, and streaming. When we first announced that we were doing this on Netflix and it's going to be the first original programming for Netflix, everyone was like, what? You're doing, you have a David Fincher directed show starring Kevin Spacey and you're putting it on the internet?
Yeah, I remember you guys told me one time, we were chilling at Kevin's downtown, and this, I don't know how many years ago it was, but you were saying that you had this idea that, you know, it was almost as if, what was it, you'd go see a film, then you could leave the movie theater. If you wanted to buy the DVD, it would be out there for you. Because, like you said, people aren't going to always go to the movie theater. There's going to be different ways to digest movies. And I remember that striking.
How long ago was that? You got a good memory.
Yeah, that must 15 years ago.
My idea was that when you walk out, because everyone's got a high when they come out of the movie that they enjoy. And this one, DVDs were still a thing. But the whole thing was that as you're leaving the movie theater, you can buy the DVD for the movie you just saw and sell it on that high so that the studios could double dip into the profits there. That you can't do that now, but now that's why I'm pushing now day and date releasing. give the people ability to watch it at home, pay a premium, mm-hmm. and watch it at home if they can't or don't want to go to the theater. That's going to come, and that's going to happen as well. It's just the theaters are resistant to that,
I
mean, going to be guys like me that are going to change that.
Well, I think it's mad forward thinking, because I remember back when it was starting to be file sharing, which was an issue for film later on, but early it was a music thing. I was talking to this guy at my old label, and he was a product manager, and I was like, yo, you guys should really pay attention to it. Nah, we can control this. I go, what do you mean control this? No, I was like, you're crazy, man. This shit is uncontrollable already, and you're already saying you can control it. And no one wanted to jump on board with a lot of stuff, I guess, for fear of the unknown. But I guess it's guys like you that were like, look, you know what? People are going to do what they want to do in their own time now, because time is the most expensive commodity, right? So you're not going to...
We live in a DVR society, and people, it's like... You know, that's an old school way of thinking, and not that the theater experience will never go away. It's always going to be there, but it's if you don't adapt, you'll die.
Yeah.
And also, is the studio system, and I used to talk about, like, okay, yeah, if the film business doesn't learn from the music business of what's happening to the music business at the time that you were just talking about, same thing's going to happen to us once the bandwidth opens up, and it did. So now they're still trying to hang on to these old antiquated systems. But the DVR society that we live in right now, I want to be able to – I don't want to have to be somewhere at 7:30 and pay $15 for parking and $20 for popcorn. And, you know, now that we have kids, you have to pay for a babysitter. Mm-hmm. And you got, you know, somebody sitting in front of you on a cell phone or talking or interrupting. And, you know, you got to take a piss and you sit there and hold it and while you're watching a bad movie and afraid you'll miss a bad plot point. So you're, you know, fucking, you know, because we're older and it's harder to hold a piss. So I want to be able to sit down with either myself or have a couple friends over, grab a beer, 7:08.
Yeah.
You guys ready to start it? Yeah. All right, hold on. Wait, I got to send this text. All right, here we go. Fucking start it and go. And wait, what did they just say? Let me rewind that. Because, you know, my hearing's going because I'm getting older too. Rewind it. Fucking so I don't miss anything. Halfway in, have to take a piss, pause. Get up, get a couple beers, come back down, sit down, take a piss, start it, and go.
Yeah.
Watch it on my own time and my convenience. And you know what? I would pay a premium for that.
Oh, yeah.
I would pay 60, 80, not, depending on what the movie is, and let the market determine what that price is going to be. Right now, whatever movie came out, Wonder Woman or whatever it was that came out this last weekend, and with Mummy's coming out this weekend, and whatever movie was the weekend before... I don't even remember last time I've gone to movies. But if I could do that, what I'm just saying now, and sit on my couch and get the latest release and pay a premium for it, I would do that. And my industry, it's so frustrating to me because that's money we're leaving on the table.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know what people do? And I'll be the first to admit it. I've done it as well. It's very easy to go and get a torrent and watch it and do it that way. But you get a poorer quality and it's more difficult to do. But it's always, as I've always said, give the people what they want, how they want it, and they'll pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at, like, the biggest music retailer in the world is iTunes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they are doing film. They're doing a lot of, because, like you said, the bandwidth opened up. People can stream stuff now. I'd rather, you know, it's you know, like, I could go get free music if I just had a couple more keystrokes, but I'll just go to the iTunes and see if they have it.
It's just easy. It's easier now.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
It's easier. It's legit. It's your shit's there. It keeps it all categorized. Yeah. You know, it's just easy. It's there. And it's, what, 99 cents for a song or $1.99 or whatever it is? Like, yeah, whatever. No big fucking deal. As opposed to going and doing this, you don't know what you're getting or where you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you go on one of those sites, and you know, I've been told that they have a lot of pop-up windows, and it's all dubbed in Russian, whatever, you know? And, you know, I get Hollywood Insider. I know what's going on, man. But it is one of those things where people would do the right thing if they're given that as the first option. You know what I mean? Like, people are good deep down. So if you go, hey, look, just hit this button right here and you get it the way you want it, HD, you can have it forever. Or you can go over here and listen to it with Russian subtitles and fucking horrible quality. But, it's, you know, I think...
Yeah, no, and then it's all money gone. What they're actually doing, they're encouraging piracy by not doing this. And it's actually the theaters that are causing it, because the theaters are the ones that are most resistant to it.
Yeah.
Because right now, the theater, and I say it as I piss all the theater owners off when I say it, but the theaters, they take 50% of the box. So if they're showing your movie, you're the Huey Studio, and they're showing your movie, you're only getting 50% of what it's doing. They're taking the other 50%, but then they're also taking all the concessions, all that $20 popcorn and soda. They're then taking all that too. What I've said a lot is, you know what? If I had the control, and I don't have the control, if I had the control, I would be like, wait, your theater doesn't exist without our content. So if you want our content, you're going to pay us for it, and we're going to take a piece of your concessions. I'd fucking flip that bitch.
You're Peter Grant those motherfuckers, man. Remember, Peter Grant was the manager of Led Zeppelin. Remember that story? He was like, yeah, you want them to come to America? $1 million. Like, just $1 million? He goes, for each member of the band. And they're like, No, but for real, I mean, content is king, and it's been king for a while. And I know that was kind of like where you—that was where you were coming from. And like, look, if you, for instance, like the Netflix thing, you guys kind of put Netflix on the map, right? And you know you did. And it's like, that's great that you had been able to kind of shape the way people digest art. And I think that's great that people can do it the way it's easiest for them to do. But at the same time, do you think? Do you think that like because like say the theaters, it is an industry that might be have to be a fatality of movies going into the next 50 years?
No, I don't think movie theaters will ever go away. I think it's an experience that will always be there.
It's like going out to a concert, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it needs to improve. And I think that it needs to improve in ways that the audience are embracing movies in a bigger way than they are now. That starts with doing things like I was talking about before and to enhance the experience. Because look, there's date nights, there's event movies, there's hot summers, people want to go for the air conditioning. In some places it can be an economical way to take the whole family out and do one thing with the whole family. There's a lot of reasons that the theaters won't ever go away, and they're still doing well. And I think what they're cannibalizing though themselves, and what they're afraid of is the day-to-day release and cannibalizing themselves. But I think in turn, it's doing a reverse, where I think if you get people and continually keep them as interested in movies now by doing what I would like, I'm not giving the theaters any money, but I'm also not giving the studios any money because I'm not seeing it.
Yeah.
But if you get me into a groove or somebody that's not, you just keep that movie watching experience in play, I think people will be more enticed to go to a theater for bigger event movies or for any other reasons I was saying.
Yeah, I mean,
but when I get there, don't make it like the Arclight. You ever go to the Arclight in LA?
Yeah, it's a great one.
Where it's assigned seating, stadium seating. Yeah. They come out, they introduce the movie. If anybody is like on their phone or whatever, they monitor and they come. It's a proper place.
It's like a film lover's place. I think almost like that's what theaters are turning into. Like, I think when you said event movies are things that people don't really realize. But, like, if I'm going to see Star Wars, I got a dope-ass 65-inch media room thing happening in my house. I'll go chill there with I'll be among my family on a nice sofa. But, man, I'd go to a movie theater to see a Star Wars or something like that.
There is something about seeing something with an audience, too. Something like that. Star Wars, you want to go and see that. Or whatever, the next big event movie is. Like 50 Shades of Grey, for example, ladies not out. They all
word up, man. Yeah. You did a lot for freaks around the world. You know that, right?
Wasn't me, it was E.L. James.
Well, you know what I'm saying? You brought that shit around to everybody, man. But there was an article that I read when you and Kevin first got into Relativity, right? And it was kind of like, it was almost, and I don't take this the wrong way, but it was kind of like the disbelief that like CNN had when Trump won the presidency. They were like, this is not really happening. Like some Rachel Maddow kind of like confused explanation. Like, this is us now. Oh my God, these people have taken over it's like the inmates have taken over the asylum. And I was just thinking, shit could not be in better hands than the two of you guys. That's what I mean, I don't know who's freaking out, but then I realized the people that are motivated by things that are bullshit are going to be freaked out by you because you're not motivated by that bullshit. And I think that's great. Well, I guess, how is it being like one of the people that is running a film studio, man? That's a pretty heavy deal.
Well, I left. I left.
No, how was it?
Oh.
I know you did it for a minute. Yeah, I mean, it must have been pretty crazy. That's why I want to know, how was it? How was it?
It was great initially, and what I thought I was going to be able to do, but ultimately the financing didn't come through. And believe me, I pissed a lot of people off in the short period of time I was there. Unfortunately, I didn't get the runway to do what I was planning on doing. If I would have, I think that was the big, everyone was like, why did you take this? You were doing so well as a producer. Trigger Street was one of the hottest production companies, and Relativity was, you know, was bankrupt. And my whole thing was, look, it was bankrupt when I came in. How much worse can it get? You know? And if it works out, then great. And if it doesn't, then it was bankrupt when I came in, and you know, I'll just exit, which ultimately I ended up doing. But I thought that we were going to have financing in place, and I was going to have runway to be able to do that. And that was like, that would have been a key time for somebody like me to do a lot of stuff that I've done in the past, and you're creating ways and disrupting shit in the right way. And if I was able to have that runway to build a studio up to place I wanted it to be, then I could have started making those changes and you know, been a leader and had it basically forced a lot of people to follow that path, and then essentially enlightened a lot of people to what could be done. But like I said, I didn't get the opportunity, and it was a great experience for me for the short period of time I was there, because I got to see how it worked on the inside.
Because if you're going to change shit, that's how you do it, right?
Yeah. But it was very educational, just even when I go and take a project as a producer now, that I'm, you know, back to doing what I've always done, mm-hmm. I have a better understanding of what's happening on the inside, so I just log that and use that to my advantage when I, you know, deal with other projects now.
Yeah, I guess it makes you a better producer if you know what the motivations of people at a studio would be. I can't really fathom, like, how, I mean, there was that, what was that crazy Coen Brothers with James Brolin played the studio head. It was a bomb, but it was a good movie, man.
No, what the hell was it? Was it Hail Caesar? Or?
Yeah, it was Hail Caesar, man. Yeah. And I liked that movie. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, but it was a little too inside baseball,
though. Yeah, it was, though, man. I mean, the limited stuff I know, I was catching a couple inside jokes, but it was just one of those things where James Brolin's character was like, it was so well written because no one in Hollywood's like that, man. The guy was just like, I'm a straight shooter. That's who I am. I'm a straight shooter. I'm making it happen. And you know, that was the funny part about it, that everybody's just going, like, you know, really bugging out, man. I know that.
No, but having that inside perspective, and actually Mike DeLuca, who I produce a lot with, you know, he used to be the head of New Line, and then he was head of production at DreamWorks, and then he was the head of production at Sony for a short period in between us making films. I learned so much from him, though, because him being the head of a studio and the head of production at a couple of studios, he knew exactly what was thinking and what the thinking was, both before we had a meeting or a call or the reason for a note or an email. He totally knew the reason behind it, knew how to react to it and how to deal with it, which really helped us get movies pushed forward. So it was a good little peek behind the curtain that I'll just use my advantage for projects going forward.
Yeah, speaking of going forward, what is on the horizon for you, dude, aside from moving into your house, man? Is this your office I'm kind of looking at?
This is a dining room right now, but right now it's the staging area for all the booze.
This is the staging area for the booze, man. Yeah, because from the dining room, we can go anywhere in the house. It's an equal distance. <Yeah.
laughs> But it's more of a central location. Season 5, as you know, is out on Netflix now, House of Cards. We're going to start season 6 in the fall. I have a show that I was the executive producer on about Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber.
Yeah, man.
That's with Sam Worthington and Paul Bettany.
Oh, really? I like Paul Bettany, man.
Yeah, he plays Ted Kaczynski.
Really? No shit, really? Yeah. I like that dude. Oh, man, yeah, he's cool, man.
Yeah, so that comes out August 1st on Discovery's 8 episodes. I got a bunch of projects I'm still doing in development. I'm working to start a film fund, so I'm you know, going out on my own and going to do my own thing. But other than that, I've just been kind of laying low and not really hanging out with my daughter and moving into my new house. So just kind of fucking laying low.
Yeah, I tell you, enjoy life, man, especially with youngins, man. That's what I always say. I have I have the wealth that I could spend. You know, the wealth is spending time with your children, man, because that's like,
yeah,
you only can be that age once, dude. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I'll tell you, if you ever need any bit acting, I can remember a couple lines, not many anymore, but, you know, enough to be like, yes, Mr. President.
Well, the first and only time that I worked with you, that was a silent film.
So. Yeah. I mean, I do it. I am known for my voice.
Where I give you, where we just hear your voice.
I'm known for my voice, dude.
I'm sure you know this for yourself now that you've tuned in, but it's pretty awesome to get 45 minutes on Skype with one of the biggest producers in Hollywood. Now, I hope you enjoyed the pod and you're ready for what's coming out next. It's my man, DJ Uncle Mike, yo. Another one of my guys from way back in the day. If you enjoyed that King pod last week, you're going to love the Uncle Mike pod. He's one of the longest serving DJs on the New York City club scene, still rocking bods to this day. And it's all down to Uncle Mike that FLC even got signed, so you have him to thank for that. And he tells the story from his perspective, and it's the first time I heard it, and it's pretty awesome. So you look out for that one. Drop it in your favorite podcast joint. That'd be iTunes, Acast, Stitcher, wherever your good podcasts are got. That's going to be coming out next week. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us one of them nice reviews on the iTunes. Let us know you love us and keep the sponsors happy. Everybody's got to pay the bills so we can keep doing this for you. All right. Thank you very much. Until next time, stay classy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.